You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, quizzical, quick quibblers, quivering for quiddity about quicksilver, quinine, and quinces. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 231, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your youthful yogis yammering about yogurt, yolks, and yoctoseconds.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Yoctosecond. What division is that, Karen?
It is one septillionth of a second.
Gosh. Excellent.
Which is 10 to the negative 24.
Fantastic.
Wow.
Since I got this list open, let me share some. I think for us, we all have heard of nanosecond.
Yeah.
Past that, we have picosecond, femtosecond.
I've heard of those for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Attosecond, A-T-T-O, attosecond, zeptosecond, yoctosecond. Yeah. They all sound like weird Star Wars characters.
They do.
Well, approximately one femtosecond ago, I didn't think I was going to be on this week's episode because we were on vacation this weekend, but we got home a little early. I got home and then I'm like, wait a minute, it's like one. I can jump on this episode after all.
Yay,
I'm here. And I've prepared nothing. So I'll just sort of coast along. And
You're like the in-studio kind of the co-host on our morning show, right? You're in charge of like the sound effects and
Good job, Ray. I was actually at it's a place called, it's called Great Wolf Lodge. It's this chain, basically like imagine a Vegas hotel resort casino, but like for kids. As you upgrade your hotel rooms, you don't upgrade them to like penthouse suites and stuff like that. You upgrade them so that there's like more weird stuff in it for the kids. So like there's the kids like slept in a little cabin, like kind of that was inside the room called like Wiley's Den. You could upgrade that to more of a cottage sort of thing, you know. there's a big indoor water park and just all this kind of stuff that you can do. But the most interesting thing we did is this thing called Magic Quest, and it's basically like it's a video role-playing game that just takes place throughout the entire building.
Whoa, and, like a scavenger hunt kind
yeah,
of?
Yeah. So you buy WoW, basically. It's like you buy a magic wand, and then your magic wand has a little IR sensor in it, and so when you wave the magic wand at any of the various stations or things all around the place, it knows who you are and where you're at on your quest. You see, like, there's a, you know, big video screens, and it's like, I bet you we know some of the people who made this. Like, I'm not really sure who made this, but it's like a video game, and it's like the characters come out, and they're just like, they're like, oh, tiny magi, you're here to save our beautiful forest. We need you to go find the disco pine cone and the funky fungus in the forest and bring me back those things. And so it's like, instead of like a fetch quest of now we're running all over the lobby and all over the whole resort, basically looking for this mushroom and this hive of honey, and you wave your wand at it to collect it. So you bring all the stuff back, and it's like, oh, now you've created this rune. Oh no, something's going on in Whispering Woods. Better get over there. Then you run over there, and there's a boss fight, and you use the runes that you put together to like fight this boss. And like, they've got an energy meter. You got to do all the stuff right with your wand. And it took us like, I don't know, like 4 hours, I would say.
Oh my God.
The whole thing, like spread across, you know, the vacation to do the whole thing, but you can beat the final boss and get the ending and the end and all that kind of stuff. And it was really fun. It was like this, you know, like kind of, you know, small role-playing game, but like had you running all around to collect items and bring them back to various stations and things like that.
Who had more fun, Chris, out of your whole family? Like, did you have the most fun?
No. Our 2-year-old had the most fun.
Oh, really?
Because there's a water park in there. So, I mean, she's just like, wah! You know.
Oh, yeah.
All right, without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. I have a random Trivial Pursuit card, and you guys have your barnyard buzzers ready. Here we go. Let's answer some questions. Blue Edge for geography. In which European city would you find the Luxembourg Gardens and the Latin Quarter? Colin.
Paris.
You are correct. It is Paris.
Yes.
Pink Wedge for pop culture. According to The Simpsons series creator Matt Groening, who are Homer, Marge, Lisa, and Maggie named after?
Oh, come on.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah. Chris.
Renaissance painters. it's members of his family.
Yep. His That's parents right. and That's sisters. Right. So really, he is Bart. All right. Yellow Wedge. Which religious leader was born Jorge Mario Bergoglio? Sorry, Whoa. Let me say that. Jorge Mario, Bergoglio.
I want to say this is Pope Francis?
Correct, it is.
Okay. Nice.
Pope Francis. Purple Wedge, which American author's first novel is set in Pamplona, Spain? Colin.
This seems like Hemingway is a safe guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Ernest Hemingway. Ernest Hemingway.
Yes, Ernest. Him and his multi-toed cats. Yes. Do you know what book it was? His first novel.
Here's where I have to admit I have actually read not all that many Hemingways.
Sun Also Rises?
Yes, it is. The Sun Also Rises. Green Wedge for science. What is the name of the transparent layer that forms the front of the human eye?
Ooh.
Chris.
The cornea.
Yes. I get it confused with aqueous humor, which I think that's just like
inside your eye.
Yeah, that's like the jelly.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, last question. Orange Wedge. Sports, good old sports. In NFL football, it says.
Yeah.
NFL football. That's what the card
says.
That's
the National Football League.
Yeah. Yeah. To contrast it with CFL football, Karen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
XFL.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is the rule called that states that a receiver must keep full control of the ball even after hitting the ground?
What is the rule called?
The rule that says you have to keep full control of the ball even after hitting the ground.
Holding.
You have to maintain football control,
gotcha.
Right? Is that what they're
saying? It's named after a person, if that
helps. Oh, really? Okay. The Homer Simpson.
The Bradshaw.
Homer Groening.
The Calvin Johnson rule.
Ah, yes. Okay. Yes. Oh, okay. Calvin Johnson.
No. Calvin Johnson rule. All right. Good job, Brains. So this week's episode is inspired by a special national holiday that occurs on April 30th. April 30th is National Boba Day here in the United States. So national for United States is National Boba Day. And that got me thinking about things that are round, things that are circles, things that are spherical. And I don't think we've dedicated an episode to a shape before, but today's the first time. This week we're going in circles.
Well, I'll start us off here. I have a not a dad joke for you guys, but this is a classic bit of dad trivia, maybe, or a casual bar trivia.
Okay, this
is not a joke. All right, this is a serious question. Even though I am smirking like a dad while I'm asking,
it feels like a dad setup. This is not a joke.
There is a very specific answer I am fishing for here.
Okay.
I will tell you that. But I want you to imagine this question kind of in the, you know, your friend at the bar asking you a question, you know, trying to stump you, or, you know, maybe this is like on a job interview just to sort of see how you think, you know,
tricky.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's not a joke, not a riddle. There is an answer to this. Why is a manhole cover round?
Okay.
Oh, I know why.
You may have heard this one before. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the dad trivia answer is, and maybe you're going to tell me that this is actually not the case, but that if you had a square manhole, then it would be a man's slot, not a manhole. No, then if you had a square manhole, a square manhole cover could fall into a square manhole, but a round manhole cover can't fall into a round manhole.
Is that what you've heard as well, Dana? Is that what you were thinking?
Because the diagonal is longer than the sides of a square. So yep, it would right, be able right. to fall right in.
Yeah. That is absolutely the answer I was fishing for. Thank you for not letting me down. Those statements are in fact true. That if you have, you know, a manhole cover, and you assume that the sort of the lip under the edge is just thick enough just to support the cover, that a circle, a round shape, will not fall in on itself, even if you have it up on the edge. And as you can imagine, this is really good for safety reasons, right? I mean, these suckers, you know, can weigh 200, 250 pounds, you know, cast iron. You absolutely do yeah. not want a 200-pound cast iron disc sliding down at you from above when you're in a very tight space. It's just absolute recipe for disaster. In addition to that, there are a number of other very reasonable reasons that a manhole cover is round. So this is where the dad trivia is true as far as it goes, but doesn't really tell the whole story. So for one thing, it's just easier to manufacture a round chunk of metal. You know, it's also part of the reason that, you know, barbells and dumbbells classically are round is it's kind of easier to roll them around if you need to. You don't have to lift and carry it everywhere. You can kind of, you know, roll it a short distance, you know, a giant barrel of oil too. It's an advantage to have it be round. But yeah, it's easier to put back on. You don't need to worry about the orientation, which way it's turned. And then, of course, just purely financially, it just uses the least amount of material needed to cover a width of a given size. As, you know, basic geometry and your eyeballs will tell you, a circle of a given width just uses less material than a square of the same width. And on and on and on. There are other, you know, related reasons. It's less likely to warp unevenly. It's maybe safer if it pops off. There's not a dangerous corner poking out in the middle of traffic, on and on. So if anyone ever asks you that question with kind of a twinkle in the eye, yeah, that's what they're looking for, is that it can't fall in on itself.
But doesn't hurt to also talk about all of the things you just mentioned.
Yeah. Did you know?
Quite at least with their beer, awkwardly. Remember not to talk to you again.
That's how you might drive away the person next to you at the bar. I can now let me tell you how to drive away the five or six people in the radius around you at the bar.
The
far nerdier observation and answer to make here is, it is true that a circle shape will not fall in on itself in the manhole cover scenario. But there are indeed many other shapes that will not fall in on themselves as well. In fact, any shape that is a, quote, curve of constant width will satisfy this requirement. Now, what is a curve of constant width? All right. So a circle, absolutely the simplest case of a curve of constant width. It has curved edges, and no matter how you rotate it, it has the same width. You know, if you were to imagine to, like, you had a pair of calipers, right? Or, you know, like you put it between two blocks of wood. No matter how you turn that circle, those blocks of wood aren't going to move back and forth.
Whereas there are other shapes that do that?
There are. There is a class of shapes in particular called Rouleau polygons. And these are named after physicist Franz Rouleau. R-E-U-L-E-A-U-X.
Oh, okay.
Rouleau polygons. Rouleau. And I guarantee you have seen sort of the simplest, most classic case of one of these, which is a Rouleau triangle, which is what he kind of wrote the most about. And what a Rouleau triangle is I want you to imagine a triangle, an equilateral triangle. Okay, so all sides the same length. But instead of being straight, the sides are segments of a circle. So imagine if a circle kind of bowed out on the edges.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's like a strawberry, kind of.
You know, you'll see this shape a lot for, like, highway signs or government seals or logos or things like that. If you, like, took a triangle and kind of just inflated it a little bit.
A bloated
triangle. That's better. I like that. A bloated triangle. In addition to being very pretty to look at, a Rouleau triangle, and indeed any Rouleau polygon, is a curve of constant width. If you put a Rouleau triangle between two chunks of wood and you turn it and rotate it, those chunks of wood will stay the exact same width apart the entire rotation through, even though it is not a circle. It has kind of pointy edges. And so if you were to manufacture a manhole shaft in the, or a cover at least in the shape of a rouleau triangle or a rouleau pentagon, right, it would also not fall in on itself because those are curves of constant width.
Whoa.
All right. Yeah.
As one side is getting less bloated, the other side is bloating up.
Exactly.
I made some toys on my Instagram with those with the rouleau triangles. Yeah. So you can move things up and down with it.
That's right.
The same distance. But
and Dana, in fact, what Franz Rouleau was interested in is translating linear motion from rotating shapes. And this is how he got interested in this shape in particular, was it rotates, but the width does not change.
Other than the rouleau triangle, are all the other rouleau shapes like bloated versions?
That's exactly right. Any other, so you could have a six-sided rouleau polygon, which is
bloated.
That's right, they're bloated, and they all have constant width, constant diameter. So a few episodes ago, Chris, you had a question for us about what distinguishes the Canadian $1 coin, or the loonie,
if you
will. And the answer was it has 11 sides.
It is
a hendecagon. Yes. And like our dad trivia here, that is true as far as it goes. It has 11 sides, but it is not a regular hendecagon.
Ooh.
The Canadian $1 coin is a 11-sided rouleau polygon. It is a rouleau 11-gon. Now, what that means is, if you have automated machinery, for instance, vending machines, where the width of a coin needs to be constant, this satisfies that requirement.
That makes so much sense.
It is
coin sorting machines.
Yes, yeah. Coin sorting machines. It's very pleasing to look at. I learned that when the U.S. government introduced the Susan B. Anthony dollar, one of the ideas sort of in the thinking planning stage was maybe it'll be an 11-sided, you know, rouleau polygon. They ended up not doing that. They ended up making it is a perfect circle, but they stamped on the inside, they inscribed an 11-sided figure, maybe to sort of hint at what they were getting at, also to try and visually differentiate it. But the Canadian $1 coin, they did it. They went through, they gave us a 11-sided coin. They are not the only coin. There are other international coins that are rouleau shapes, which I've learned is very popular. Yeah, so at this point, you've now driven away everybody except the bartender. But you are the most correct person in that.
The bartender is way on the other side of the
bar.
Right. You will not get another drink for the rest of the night.
So, like I said at the beginning of the show, April 30th is National Boba Day here. National as in national here in the U.S. But it is National Boba Day pretty much every day in the birthplace of boba, which is my homeland, Taiwan. And boba has emerged as such a huge symbol for Taiwanese identity and pride. And I don't know how to describe this, but like boba really is consumed anytime, all times of the day. It's like a life source. It's like manna. You know, like tea shops and stands are everywhere. It's where you go after school. It's where you go for a break. It's almost kind of our coffee breaks in America. Oh. You know, it's kind of a social thing or a treat for yourself.
It's as close as we've gotten to that vision of the future where all nutrition is dispensed in perfectly round balls or something like that.
It's people. Yeah. What is boba? It's not people.
It's
at the core. At the core, the most standard original form is black tea with milk, sweeteners, and a scoop of large caramel-colored tapioca balls. The balls are about 1 centimeter wide. It usually is served cold with ice, and it comes in a plastic cup and a large, wide straw, so you can suck the balls up the straw. You drink the tea. You get a few of the tapioca balls and you chew and eat, and it's like having a snack and a drink at once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also known as bubble tea, pearl tea, tapioca tea, you know, boba has really become just a blanket term for customizable tea with customizable toppings. Nowadays, you can pretty much personalize almost every aspect of tea. It doesn't even have to be black tea. It can be green tea, fruit tea, slushy. It doesn't have to have milk, or even if you want milk, there's almond milk, soy milk, you know, different types of milk, how much milk. And instead of boba, if you don't like boba, the tapioca balls, there's lychee jelly. There's like scoops of flan you can put in your tea. Whoa. Of all the sources that I've poured over, it's clear that it is unclear who came up with boba milk tea first. Like famous foods we've talked about on the show before, like cheesesteaks and Cubanos. Like it's always many places, more than one place would claim to be the birthplace.
Right, right.
Okay.
But we know that it happened around 1980s in Taiwan. Before we get into it, I want to ask you guys, what is your boba drink of choice?
I do like just the original classic.
I've always been a big fan of the taro milk. It's the purple one. It tastes like melted ice cream. That's why I like it. It tastes like melted ice. It tastes delicious. It works well with the balls.
I always go with the classic. Or these days, you know, if I'm in the kind of the fruity mood, maybe like mango green tea with the lychee jelly. Chris, what about you?
I do like the cheese tea, but that's not what we're talking about.
Oh, that's part of as boba. Yeah, yeah. The cheese topping. The cheese topping.
I love the cheese topping. Tent. That stuff is great.
Yeah, it's a big tent. It is. Literally, it's just literally. Any drink.
Anything you can suck up from a jumbo straw.
It's like when you get like a good Irish coffee and they put like a slotted cream that just sits on top. Yeah, not whipped cream, but like a sort of thick layer. But it's more
salty.
It's salty. Yeah, it's like salty, but they call it like salty cheese, but it's more like kind of salty cream.
Huh.
So as I dug deeper into boba lore, what I found, the invention of boba is actually a culmination of like a few key moments in history. So let's talk about the boba balls. Boba balls are essentially tapioca balls. We might be familiar with like the smaller variety, like in tapioca pudding, which is like the small white kind of clear. The boba balls in the classic boba milk tea is like a jumbo version with some caramel color, some sweetener. Do you guys know what is tapioca?
Is it cassava? Yeah,
it is. Like good job, Dana.
Starch, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tapioca is describing the starch of the cassava plant. And cassava, the root tuber, like it kind of looks like a long potato. Cassava, also known as yuca, we might see them in some grocery stores. And tapioca is the starch extraction. It's almost like, you know, it's like flour is to wheat as tapioca is to cassava, right? It is like the starch form. The cassava is native to Central America and South America. And there's even evidence that the Mayans were cultivating cassava for food. And in the 16th century, in the high times of maritime trade and colonialism, the Portuguese were traveling a lot in and out of what is modern day Brazil. They brought the cassava from Brazil to Africa. They also introduced the cassava to Asia. And in the 1600s, you know, there was a lot going on in the little island that is Taiwan. We got the Dutch East India Company that was there. The Portuguese were there. The Ming Chinese was there. Of course, there was also the indigenous population. Lots going on. And so the Portuguese introduced cassava and has become a really important crop in Asia. Cassava is used to produce biofuel, the starch, you know, tapioca. It's also used to produce MSG.
I didn't know that.
Laundry products. You know, when people go to, you know, the cleaners or dry cleaners to get their shirts washed, pressed, and starched.
Get your collar starched.
That is the starch, is the cassava starch. It's one of the ingredients for a lot of those starching solutions. And of course, tapioca starch is also used in a lot of Asian foods, especially in Southeast Asia, breads, cakes, sweets, and of course, boba balls. And before boba milk tea, before boba tea, the boba balls have traditionally been a popular dessert topping, mostly on top of like shaved ice. You know, I think Koreans have bingsu, there's Japanese shaved ice. There's always like kind of the dessert where it's like a mound of ice and there's a bunch of stuff on it. And so boba has been like a very popular topping for a really, really long time prior to boba milk tea. And I should know, this is very strange, and I hope I can like describe this well. In Taiwanese cuisine, there is a great obsession with a particular texture called Q. Q, the letter Q. Maybe it was based on a local word or something, but like growing up my whole life, I know it as the letter Q. Q, the texture Q, I would personally describe it as like bouncy with a bit of stickiness, but okay. But experts have described it as the Asian version of like al dente, elastic, chewy, springy. You can find it in mochi. Mochi is Q. Mm-hmm. It's kind of chewy, bouncy, you know, ramen or a hot pot. Maybe it had fish cakes, Asian fish cakes. That texture is Q.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, like I said, with the shaved ice, most of these dessert toppings are Q. It's like, you know, yam balls, taro balls, rice balls, tapioca balls. You see it in packaging. It's in signs.
Yeah, like, now that you say that, it's like, oh yeah, okay, I've seen the letter Q used in the signage, you know, or the names of boba places.
Just the letter
okay,
Q.
Okay, interesting.
Or even QQ for super Q, you know.
Q inflation.
Yeah. Tapioca balls, boba balls are Q. Yeah. They're so Q.
They're so Q.
When and how did the tea part come in? So Taiwan was under Japanese rule for about 50 years up until the end of World War II. And there was a local Taiwanese man who was working at an izakaya, which is like a Japanese diner bar, as a bartender and a mixologist. And after his Japanese employer left and went back to Japan after World War II, this man decided to use all of his bartending know-how and his equipment and apply it to tea. He used the shaker and he would handshake tea. Yeah. Importantly and distinctively, it was cold. Cold tea wasn't really a thing. And this exploded. And before boba milk tea, there was what we call bubble foam tea. Palmuo Hongcha means foamy red tea. Cold tea became a very standard beverage and that people would enjoy. And you can have flavored teas, you can have different things. And it's just the importance is being cocktail shaken to get kind of that creamy, foamy quality. And of course, so now we have the foamy tea, we have the boba. You know, currently two places say that they had the idea of putting it together in the 80s, and that's where boba came from. So I didn't really use the term boba until only like maybe a couple years ago, just because everybody calls it boba here. I always called it pearl tea.
Yeah.
Boba, colloquially, we talked about the small tapioca balls, the white kind, the white little kind, and then we have like, you know, the boba balls are much bigger. Boba is a term to describe a buxom lady with very large boobs.
Uh-huh.
So a marketing ploy at some point where it's like, oh, yeah, we know the small tapioca balls, but here there are some bazonka, like big tapioca balls.
Busty milk tea. Yeah.
You know what? It's busty milk tea. And weirdly in the translation, you also say milk and there's like this weird connotation with, you know, boobs and milk. So yeah, busty milk tea is more appropriate. So the next time you enjoy any type of boba tea, remember that it is such a culmination of so many different things in world history that kind of came together. And now you drink it through a very big straw.
I love it.
To end my segment, I have a food balls quiz, international food balls, where the answer is a food ball.
House of International Food Balls.
Okay. There's a market for that.
There is a market for I think, you know, a lot of people like eating food on a stick.
Yeah. Imagine just like, a buffet of, you know, all the same size. And, you know, you just grab your stick and.
Yeah. For a while, my kid would only eat round food. There was like a little period where it was all meatballs and bread balls and cheese balls, like every
cheese balls. All right. Well, maybe you'll do really good this quiz. Here we go.
All right.
What Italian food ball translates to little orange?
No.
What was your guess?
Oh, wait. Oh, no. Actually, I'm going to go with this. Okay. Arancini.
Correct. Yes. Arancini.
I never thought about
it's the rice ball.
fried risotto ball of Italy has nothing to do with orange, except for the fact that it looks like an orange.
Looks
it looks like a little orange.
That's what brought me back to, wait a minute, I think that might be it.
We are probably familiar with Ferrero Rocher. Do we all know Ferrero Rocher?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not really easy to say.
Ferrero Rocher. Too many R's in there. They got to lose one or two of those R's. Yeah.
Which is like a chocolate hazelnut truffle ball wrapped in gold foil. It has a twin, or it has a sibling, that is white almond coconut. What is it called?
This is a brand name, or
this is, I mean, it's Ferrero something else.
I can picture it too. What is it?
Oh, it's Ferrero something else. I know it.
Ferrero Blanche.
It is Raffaello. Yes, Raffaello. Yeah. Which language am I trying to pronounce?
Raffaello.
It's like the matter antimatter versions.
Yes, yes, the antimatter version. So in back in Taiwan, Ferrero Rocher was huge.
Oh, really?
My gosh. You can buy a bouquet of flowers, but each flower is a Ferrero Rocher, and it's like gold, and it's like so fancy. It's so fancy. And then I came here, I was like, oh.
Wasn't it, there was I don't know if it was a TikTok or it was somebody who like, their dad loved Ferrero Rochers. And so they wanted to prank them. And the dad hated Brussels sprouts. So they took Brussels sprouts and coated them in chocolate, like made them look like Ferrero Rochers and like left them out as a, rewrapped them and left them out as a trap.
Love the commitment.
Oh my gosh.
That's funny. All right, next question. In 2019, McDonald's debuted the first vegan Happy Meal for kids.
Really?
And this happened in Sweden.
Okay.
Happened in Sweden. Featuring what kind of food balls? Colin. Oh.
I mean, in Sweden, it's got to be a vegan meatballs, vegan Swedish meatballs.
No, it's not. No? It's actually not Swedish in heritage.
I think I figured it out.
It is.
Chris?
Here we go. Falafel.
You are correct.
Oh.
It's
falafel.
Yep.
Falafel. So instead of like a little baggie of chicken nuggets, it's like a little baggie of falafel, which are naturally vegan. Yeah,
very
made
smart.
Out of chickpeas, neither chicks nor peas. The method of making this Danish pancake food ball is very similar to how Japanese takoyaki is made.
Those are called...
Oh, God.
It's
like, I know it. I've eaten it. I just got to process the word, pull it out. Okay. They are called Ebelskivers.
Yeah.
Yes!
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Ebelskivers. They're usually sweet. And Ebelskiver, I think, literally means like slices of apples or apple slices, because that's usually the filling.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, takoyaki is savory and it has octopus.
But it is true. And in
they
fact,
make
you go
the
down,
same way.
If you go down to Solvang, California, and there's many places that serve them, but there's one place that they make them right out in front, you know, so you can see them making them. And yeah, it's like a little takoyaki pan. And they use two sticks to flip them.
Yeah.
Too. You know, it's like the technique. Developed separately in different parts of the world, except for
crazy?
It's chopsticks and all, except for one of them, it's just full of octopus instead, because they were like, let's ruin this.
You don't like takoyaki?
I think I'd rather have Ebelskivers.
Okay.
Is it the texture?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just think, I mean, I'll eat takoyaki, no problem.
Oh,
it is kind of weird, you know, to be like eating like a little round pancake and then now I'm chewing on a piece of octopus. it's the boba tea of pancakes.
That's all the things in there.
It is. Octopus is cute.
It is.
Maybe a little bit too, it's a little bit too sturdy.
It's bouncy,
It's bouncy. Yep. All right. Well, not enough time in the world. Because there's just so many food balls, so little time. That's the end of my quiz. Maybe I'll come back. There's just every culture has food balls.
Food balls. You
know? Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Good job, Karen. Good job, Colin. Good job, Dana. Good job, Chris. Good job, Brian. Who is Brian? I'm actually you're listening to.
Good job, Brain.
Good job, Brain. Good job, Brain.
And we're back. You're listening to Good Job, Brain. And this week we're talking about circles.
That's right. And I have a quiz about circles.
Huh.
Let's do it right in.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Dang. Okay.
Oh, man. You are free to give asterisks and bonus points.
It's on. Get ready. Get the wingdings out. We're going to. Okay.
Okay.
Let's get this started. You all will keep your own scores and we can report back on.
Okay.
All right.
I believe in you guys. I trust you. Mm-hmm. All right. Here we go.
Colin.
Sucker.
Yeah. First question. Which 1994 song from a Disney film was nominated for both an Oscar and for Song of the Year at the Grammys? Once again, this is a circle quiz.
Going easy on me, Dana. Like when you say Disney song and I'm against like Chris and Karen, I mean, it's like, oh man, throw me a line here. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. And then I'll say half a point each. I'm going to dice it up where you can. There are two other songs from that same movie that were nominated for Oscars that year. Can you name the other two Oscar nominated songs from that movie?
Okay.
I think I can make a safe guess on.
So you're saying there's three songs total that
three
got nominated.
Songs.
Wow,
1 point
really?
For the circle song, half a point each for the for the other two songs.
Oh man,
it's not going to get any more correct.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, Chris has Circle of Life. Yes, everybody has Circle of Life as the answer. That is the song, but Can You Feel the Love Tonight and Hakuna Matata,
nice, Chris,
were the other two. And
I got Hakuna Matata and then Hey Everyone, Watch Out for Hyenas, which I think was...
Be prepared.
Yeah.
Be prepared.
Hey Everyone, Watch Out for Hyenas.
That's what it is. Yeah, you know. No, I knew it had to be Can You Feel the Love Tonight, because that was huge.
Yeah.
That was on the radio.
That was a
pop
hit.
The thing I was going back and forth on is that Hakuna Matata, obviously, is very popular now, but also Elton John had recorded a version of I Just Can't Wait to Be King.
Yes.
So I was wondering if maybe that was it, but in the end, I had to go with Hakuna Matata.
So, which toy, first sold in 1965, uses a set of discs with holes and gear teeth and lets the user draw mathematical roulette curves?
I believe some of those pieces are rouleau polygons, but just with gear teeth.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The original set was just circles, but then they did add more rouleau.
Those are fun.
Oops. Those were a lot of fun.
You got it? Mm-hmm. Ready? Yeah. Show your answers. Answer. Everybody has Spirograph. Yes, the Spirograph.
Do they still sell that? Is there like a modern version of that? Like,
yeah.
They
still
have
it.
Some funky shapes, some bars. And
seems like it's an evergreen toy. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of fell out of favor for a while, and then they reintroduced it. They relaunched it in 2013.
Okay.
So, not that long ago.
All right.
But now they have like bigger versions. Yeah. The shapes are crazier.
They have putty, so it'll keep your ring in place. Like little removable putty.
Oh, that's smart.
Really smart. Yeah. Okay. What's the name of the geometric shape you get if you revolve a circle in three-dimensional space about an axis that is coplanar with the circle? You're revolving a circle around a circle, basically. You're going to get a 3D shape.
Revolving a circle around...
You're using a circle to draw something.
Uh-huh.
And you're following the path of a circle.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think I understand what you're asking.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I want the geometric name for it.
I don't know if not this the is colloquial the name. Plural version.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Okay.
You ready? What do we have? Got Taurus, toroid. I'll give you toroid. And Taurus. Yeah. It's donut shape is the colloquial word for it.
Right.
Okay. Which Teletubby has a circle on top of its antenna? Blast from the past, guys.
I have that mnemonic.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's just see if we can name them, right?
Wait, this is part of this.
Okay, all right. Writing this down.
Okay. How about for a quarter of a point, if you can name all four of them, but highlight the one that you think has the circle on top of its head.
Oh, so we're naming all of them.
Yeah. Name all of them, but draw a circle around the name that has a circle.
Man.
Oh, geez.
All right. I'm just going to. Karen's taking this so seriously right now. She's
This used to come up all the time.
Oh, it did, man.
Well, yeah, like we had a mnemonic for it. You made it to the colors, even.
I'm ready.
All right. Karen, you want to say your answer?
Okay. I put Lala, Dipsy, Tinky Winky, and Poe. Poe is the one with the circle on its head.
I had put, you know, unfortunately, I put Poe. Popo as the one with the circle.
That's okay. We'll give it to you.
Wait, I'm the one. I'm creating it. I think that's half a point. I don't give a full point.
I put Popo as the one with the circle. Then for the other three, I put Tinky Winky, Lala, and Donald Rumsfeld.
Starts with a D.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a goofy symbol next to Donald Rumsfeld, which is redeemable for some amount of points at the end. So,
well, I had circled Lala, and then I put Poe, Tipsy, and Doodle. That was as best I could do.
All right. So, Colin, I think you've earned two goofy symbols.
Ooh, excellent.
Poe is the answer, though. Poe is the one that has a circle.
Oh.
Poe with the circle. Tinky Winky, triangle, Dipsy has a straight dipstick antenna. And Lala has the curly one.
Yeah. Okay. Poe, circle, because O.
Poe has
Dipsy,
the O.
Dipstick, straight. Tinky Winky, triangle, T.
Lala for lightning.
Lala for lightning? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Lala is just the other one. If you get three of the four, you should be okay.
Yeah. And all right. What's the title of the 2017 tech thriller starring Emma Watson and Tom Hanks?
Wow. Okay. So first of all, today I learned that there is a 2017 tech thriller starring Emma Watson and Tom Hanks.
Yes.
And I'm trying to remember the theme of the quiz. Tech thriller.
It's based on a book. By round. Dave Eggers.
Okay, yeah, I think Tom Hanks is supposed to be like a Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg kind of in one type of dude.
Okay.
Slightly nefarious, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
Set in the
tech world
of social media.
All right.
I have no idea. Okay.
Might get another goofy. Well, let's see. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just playing to impress the judges at this point.
She's ready to be impressed. All right. So Chris has...
I wrote it's circle, but with no vowels. It's the name of their app.
Oh, that's really good.
You know what? You get a light bulb next to that. That was a good idea.
Okay.
And then Colin and Karen put the circle, which is the correct answer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gotten the though. You know what I mean?
No, that was part
the
of
the
it.
The but really, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So a hexafoil is a common and very old decorative pattern. It's also known as like the daisy wheel or the flower of life. It's been around since the Bronze Age. If you saw it, you'd be like, oh, okay, that thing. Mm-hmm. They make it by overlapping circles around a center point. It's a geometric shape called a hexafoil. And it kind of looks like a flower. How many petals or leaves are on a hexafoil?
Okay. I'm not going to overthink it.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm not going to
overthink it. Yeah. Don't overthink it. What do you have?
Six.
I feel bad if I put six.
Yes.
Yeah. I also noticed it's question number six, too. I felt like...
That was an accident. That was a coincidence. That's a light bulb moment. You get an extra light bulb for your answer, Colin. That was
sweet.
Good. Yeah.
What?
I'm in charge of the points.
One plus light bulb.
Okay, so there's other flower shape geometry.
That fan who's tracking all our points is like, and he adds another column to the Google spreadsheet.
We got light bulbs. Yeah,
windings.
Yeah. There's other flower shaped geometry that you'll see around, like a trefoil, a quatrefoil, octafoil. Foil means leaf, but really they usually look like petals, and it's in a radial pattern in a circle.
Right.
So next question, number seven. A strobe disc might be used by a DJ to calibrate what kind of equipment? What's a strobe disc for?
I know this.
Strobe disc. Yep. I know this one. DJ. I mean...
Okay, ready? Chris says light shows. Colin says turntable. Karen says... Turntable. It is for the turntable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's a round disc, and it has like lines that are evenly spaced, different little sets of lines that go around. And then when it spins, if the lines don't look like they're moving, that means it's calibrated correctly.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting.
It's really cool.
Visual calibrating.
Right.
It is. Yeah.
I read Questlove's book about creativity a while ago, and he made Lazy Susans that were strobe disc patterns. I don't think that they could go fast enough to work as strobe. That's where I learned about strobe discs.
You mean Academy Award winning Questlove.
He's going to EGOT one day. Okay. So what were Benday dots used to do? Benday dots.
Benday?
Yeah. Benday. Two words. Benday. And then the third word. Dots. Yeah.
Ben Day Dots.
Yeah.
Well, Colin, you know.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh.
All right. So Chris says, applies shade to artwork. Colin says, printing. What's that?
Grayscale images. Yeah.
And Karen says, peripheral vision.
Oh.
You know, I almost want to give none of you a point, even though you're very close. It's to add color to images, like comic books use the color dots.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
It's not grayscale at all. Usually it's for color, adding color books. Okay. So like Roy Lichtenstein, his big comic book looking paintings, and they had the huge colorful dots on them. Those were Benday dots that he was.
Got
it. It's so you can generate multiple colors using only three or four colors of ink, right?
Yeah. So they're like usually cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. And you layer them on top of each other. They're evenly spaced dots, but they're maybe different sizes. Halftone dots like have different sizes and different spacing. And that's how they get the grayscale effect. So this is the last question. Maybe a hard question, but we'll give it a whirl. How many circles of hell are in Dante's Inferno?
Oh.
And I'll give you a little bit of a hint. There's more than four, and there's fewer than 10. Half a point for each one you can think of.
Oh, wait. You're asking us to name the
levels?
Name them? Name them if you can.
Geez. Not just the number?
Uh-oh.
I mean...
If you were a very religious Catholic man in Italy a long time ago, what do you think would put you in hell?
All right.
Just a competition amongst friends.
As we keep reminding ourselves.
Yeah. Actually, you tell me how many you think there were first.
The number.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, the number. How many?
I thought that there were nine.
I think it's nine as well. Yeah.
Yes, you're all right. Nine.
Okay.
Good. Okay, so they were limbo. Lust, gluttony, greed, anger, heresy, violence, fraud, and treachery. Karen, do you know what your final score was, Karen? No.
Yes, I believe it is 9 3/4.
I think I have 11 if I tallied the math correctly, plus one light bulb and two goofies.
Oh.
Okay, so I actually have 8.5 points plus one goofy plus one light bulb.
Oh, okay. Well, Colin. That's it. Good job, y'all.
That was hard. That was good and hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And we have one last segment. Colin.
All right. I am going to take us further down the manhole hole with a story that involves a manhole cover, government secrets, nuclear bombs, and an enduring mystery. And I must confess that all of the manhole nerdiness at the top of the show was really kind of just a prologue to the story I really wanted to share with you guys. So in the 1950s, there was a lot of nuclear bomb research taking place, as you know, sometimes very visibly, like the Bikini Atoll experiments that we've talked about on the show. I'm sure you've read and seen many other places, and sometimes a little more secret, a little more clandestine, either in secret test sites or eventually underground. Now, underground nuclear testing is kind of common today. Most of the tests happen underground, but there was a time when someone had to be the first one to do it, and they moved from above ground or in the air explosions, ocean explosions out in the ocean. And in the United States, as you might imagine, we are particularly well-suited to underground testing out in the western desert states. Nevada, in particular, got a lot of wide open desert owned by the federal government, and they can do pretty much whatever they want out there. So there was a series of 29 nuclear tests spanning May to October 1957, and this suite of tests was one of many, many tests that the government did in the 1940s, 50s. So I'm going to describe Operation Plum Bob. Okay, do you guys know what a plum bob is?
I keep learning it and then forgetting it.
You might see like on a job site in the street or like, you know, it's an old piece of plumber and construction equipment. It's basically, at its simplest, it's just a weight on a string that you suspend. So you give yourself a plumb line that you know is something straight
vertical.
Up.
Vertical.
That's right. A nice vertical line. That's right. As I say, a series of 29 tests over several months in 1957. This took place out in the Nevada test site. Huge, huge set of exercises. I mean, thousands of personnel involved, soldiers, scientists, everybody, you know, it was, and a lot of these tests were to what are the results of nuclear explosions in various scenarios. So some of them were suspended from towers, you know, 100 feet off the ground. Some of them were in hot air balloons.
It's never done.
Yeah, exactly. Some of them were at surface level, right, because they'd never done them. And a goal of the some of these experiments was to do the first underground nuclear explosion testing. The 29 tests were named after North American mountain ranges and famous scientists, okay?
Okay.
So each individual discrete test here out of Operation Plum Bob was named, a code name. And I want to talk to you guys a little bit about Pascal A and Pascal B, named, of course, for Blaise Pascal, the 17th century mathematician and many other things.
I didn't know that was his first name. His first name was Blaise.
Blaise. Yeah, it's a pretty cool. Yeah, B L A.
It's like an American gladiator name.
Yeah, spelled differently. Yeah, the American gladiator would be B L A Z E. But
yeah. Oh, it's not. Oh, okay.
No, B L A I S E.
Okay. Okay. Classier.
It's from French gladiators.
French gladiators.
Lay gladiators.
Right. Nitro, E A O U X, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you a little bit about a scientist named Dr. Robert Brownlee. And Dr. Brownlee was involved in helping do a lot of the calculations for simulating the effects of an underground nuclear explosion. They hadn't done it before. And so, you know, there's no precedent for a lot of the things that he was doing. He did not have the advantage of modern computers. And so a lot of this was just gut level math and hard number math and working it out using the tools that you had available and the knowledge that you had. So Pascal A, okay, this was a borehole 385 feet deep, okay? So about 3-4 feet wide, straight down into the Nevada desert, and they had a bomb at the bottom of the shaft here.
Whoa.
In a kind of a containment unit, kind of concrete. It wasn't just like lowered down on a rope with a fuse like, you know, Bugs Bunny cartoon. But, you know, this is a major operation, right? So 385 foot shaft, nuclear bomb at the bottom. And they set off the bomb. And Dr. Brownlee described essentially a giant Roman candle just shooting out of the shaft.
Oh my God.
Hundreds of feet in the air, just a shaft of fire. It largely did what they were hoping it would, which is that the Earth really contained most of the force of the explosion.
Oh.
Now, I'm not, you absolutely could tell that someone had set off a nuclear bomb there, but yeah. It was not nearly as, you know, disruptive or as much radiation spread as it would be like to a mid-air blast, for instance. Now, I should mention here, giant Roman candle, flames in the air. There was on top of the shaft a manhole cover. I mean, not really a manhole cover, but a steel, cast iron, heavy duty, you know, lid, cap, if you will, on top of the shaft, you know, since the goal was to try and contain some of the explosion if they could. Now, keeping in mind that a big part of the spirit of science is, what do you think would happen if we tried this? Dr. Brownlee and the team for the next experiment decided, let's weld this cap in place. Like, let's just weld it on there and see what happens. See if it makes a difference, you know? And, you know, Dr. Brownlee said, you know, he was very direct. He's like, we can weld it on, but I will paraphrase him that basically that cap ain't going to do nothing. You know, I mean, you can put, you know, masking tape over the end of a shotgun barrel, but it's not going to make an appreciable difference. But in the name of science, they went ahead and they welded this manhole cover, this cap. Again, I say manhole. It's not really a manhole cover. It was four inches thick. It weighed, I guess, about 2,000 pounds.
Wow.
Cast iron, concrete, heavy duty, heavy duty.
3 to 4 feet wide.
Yeah, four feet diameter.
But was it round?
It was round, yes. So it did not fall in on itself. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. You wouldn't want that.
No, absolutely not on top of the nuclear bomb.
Because, Colin, because if you were in the hole and the nuclear bomb went off and then the cap fell on your head,
you're in trouble.
That's like Mr. Bean levels of nuclear testing. Yeah, yeah. He's halfway up the shaft.
Mm-hmm.
So they went ahead. They welded this cap on. And, you know, again, part of the other spirit of science is, this is going to be good. We got to film this. They got a high-speed camera. Oh, yeah. I mean, because once you've seen this happen once, you're like, they were trying to calculate how fast do you think that cap was moving when it came off?
This is like, let's give the Mythbusters guys all desert they need.
Absolutely.
And $1 billion.
Yeah. So, all right, Pascal B, essentially the same setup, holes a little bit deeper, cap is welded on, and now you've got a high-speed camera trained on the lid here.
Yes.
It's going 1,000 frames per second, the camera that they had put on there. All right, so 3, 2, 1, boom. All right, now, Dr. Brownlee himself, as I will say, like he pretty much correctly surmised there's no way the cap is staying on. But there's a range of things that could happen here, right? All right, one, you know, it's vaporized on the spot, but they were pretty sure that's not what was happening. They didn't think that was happening. Two, just flies off way the hell off somewhere into the reaches of the desert. Three, could it in fact fly into space? And they blew the bomb up, went to check the footage. The manhole cover, it appeared in one frame, frame after the blast. So that's, you know, 1/1000th of a second. And that just gives you like a lower bound to kind of calculate the speed, right? I mean, at a certain point, it's one and it's off. Dr. Brownlee, very roughly calculations here, estimated that it could have been going as fast as 125,000 miles an hour. Extremely fast. Faster, if it were indeed going that fast on its own, fast enough to reach escape velocity and indeed make it out into space.
If something flies up, it eventually has to drop back down.
Well, not if it hits escape velocity.
No, that's what escape velocity means. Escape velocity means it escapes Earth's gravity
and it just
leaves and it's gone. That's right. That's right. That's what that means. Right. Now, I will tell you right now, nobody knows exactly what happened because they never found it. They never found this cap. It was gone, baby. No one knows. And over the following months and years, and certainly as some of these things got a little more, certainly as some of these things got a little less classified, the legend started to grow of the manhole cover that got shot into space. Now, importantly, the Soviet Union only launched Sputnik a few months after this, okay, later in 1957. So if indeed it were true that this manhole cover, shaft cover, made it into space, it would have been the first human-created object to leave our planet. Yeah.
Not by design.
It was, kind
right,
of, though.
Right. Not long after the Pascal B test, he sort of himself theorized that maybe it vaporized in the atmosphere, okay? So adding another option to those list that I listed off. So kind of like a meteoroid, right? Burning itself up in the atmosphere because of atmospheric friction, except, you know, going in the opposite direction. Right, exactly, exactly. You know, he kind of later came around on that, I guess. He said, you know, he realized later it probably would not have enough time, even if it were moving that fast, and even if it did get to that height, it probably wouldn't be there long enough, you know, traveling basically perpendicular to the atmosphere to actually vaporize. So in his mind, the two only possibilities are it landed somewhere in the sand or it is out still traveling to this day out in outer space. Yeah. I have to say, I think that it probably just somewhere out in the Nevada desert, there is a gnarly looking hunk of cast iron and maybe some concrete residue just waiting to be discovered.
It doesn't even look like a manhole cover anymore, right?
No. It's like it'd be superheated, disfigured junk, right? Yeah. I mean, as you said, Karen, you alluded to Mythbusters, right? I mean, I remember like when they would do episodes with just, you know, normal style projectiles, you know, bullets or things firing them straight up. It would take them forever to try and locate those things. And I mean, granted, they're small.
Yeah.
But importantly, even if it did come back, rest assured, it could not fall into the hole.
Yeah.
Everything is fine, everybody. Down in the nuclear hole is the safest place to be if the cover comes back.
That's right.
And I would be remiss just in all these discussions of manholes and manhole covers to talk just a little bit about the gendered name here. I am absolutely in favor of removing and changing gendered names for sure. And in fact,
do they have a proposal?
Well, so our very own city of Berkeley, California, actually made the news just a few years ago, the national news, when the city council went through all of the city laws and removed every bit of gendered language, you know, partly to remove confusion, partly as a political statement, partly as just a sort of modern way of looking at laws and rules. So, for instance, anywhere in the, you know, the laws that said, you know, policeman, it's now police officer, which man-made, you know, they talk about like man-made structures for the purposes of various laws is human-made. Manhole and manhole cover were updated to, and this is in common use in other places, were updated to maintenance hole. So it's a maintenance hole and a maintenance hole cover.
Did you want like person hole cover?
You don't want person hole.
Person hole cover is just silly. You couldn't say that without snickering. Utility access hole, access hatch is another common term. Yeah. So I just wanted to at least mention that I am aware of the attempts to change that. So yeah, imagine that there might be a flying maintenance hole cover somewhere out in space or laying in the
I like utility.
Yeah, really, I agree. Cool. I agree.
Covers a lot of different possible types of holes in pipes.
Cover all your holes.
All right. So we have a listener challenge for the next few episodes. Chris last season made a crazy adventure. But what I have made is very experimental, and I hope it works out well. So during the break between this season and last season, Wordle, we talked about Wordle before, really started to gain a whole lot of steam. I was trying to think of different ways to bring that Wordle experience into a podcast audio form. So I did come up with a puzzle. And so here is my Wordle listener challenge that we're going to be doing for the next couple of episodes. Pretend there is a person who is playing Wordle, and all you have is their list of 5 entry attempts. You know, when you play Wordle, you have 6 chances to guess the right word in 6 chances, but all you have is another person's list of 5 word attempts in order. And so the challenge is, can you use this information and work backwards to figure out what exactly is the correct word?
Yeah.
Now, this person is a pretty casual Wordle player, meaning they don't bank or bench the letters. They will never repeat wrong letters. If they get a letter right, they will always use it in their next guess. If they get a letter in the right place, they will always keep that letter in that place for their next guess. Very standard player. For this episode, the 5 word attempts that I'm about to read to you, and it's in order from their first guess, second guess, third guess, fourth guess, fifth guess. And can you backwards solve and find out what the actual correct word is? Here we go. Guess number 1. Faith. F-A-I-T-H. Faith. Second guess is spoke. S-P-O-K-E. Third guess is buxom. Like buxom boba.
Yeah.
Buxom. B-U-X-O-M. Fourth guess is wood. W-O-U-L-D. And the fifth guess is gourd, G-O-U-R-D. So there you go. Faith, spoke, buxom, wood, and gourd. And just to give you kind of a little, you know, little hint to start you off, the first two guesses are faith and spoke. None of the letters in faith showed up in the second guess, spoke. So you can pretty much cross off that it's not going to be F-A-I-T or H. So that's kind of the logic. And you get into the mind of this very standard a Wordle player person. And so if you figure out the word, the secret word, you can head over to our website, goodjobbrain.com, and you'll see a Wordle puzzle section, and you can put your answer there. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about circles, about turntables, about utility hole covers, about boba and cassava plant. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on all podcast apps, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. This podcast is part of Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like Infamous America, Subtext, and Big Picture Science. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Calling all trivia nerds, Brittany here, and I host the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast with my best friend, Meredith. Is your next car ride looking like a snooze fest? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of awesome trivia every week. Harry Potter, Disney, science, sports, you name it. No more silent car troubles. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Connect, laugh, and learn with your kids, big and small. New episodes every week wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast.